Hey guys, welcome to the Twiniversity Podcast, a show created exclusively for parents of twins. I'm your host, Natalie Diaz. I am a mom of twins. I am also the Twiniversity founder, and I am the best-selling author of the book, What to Do When You're Having Two. Our goal at Twiniversity is to make sure that you always feel connected, we laugh at the little things, and we really do get to teach you a few tricks along the way. And that is what we hope this podcast is about to do. So welcome to Twiniversity.
One of my least favorite things about being a parent of twins is dealing with two stuffy noses at the same time. If you have not yet experienced this, consider yourself lucky. But now that's why I'm so excited to share with you that there is a great product out there to help you clear out those four tiny nostrils when your twins are congested. Yes, each twin has two nostrils, just throwing that out there. Meet the Oogie Bear Better Booger Picker. Say it again with me, Oogie Bear Better Booger Picker. It safely and effectively removes stubborn, sticky mucus and dry boogers from those little noses with the Oogie Bear Booger Picker, which are great for cleaning little ears too. The patented bear head design ensures that the ends will not go too far into their tiny nose, and the soft rubber scoop and loop are specifically created to be gentle enough for their tiny little noses. Also, you really should check out the Oogie Bear Nose Balm and the Oogie Bear Chest Rub. They're organic products to help clear infant airways and provide long-lasting moisture to their tiny irritated skin when they have it. The inventor of Oogie Bear is a very dear friend. She's also a doctor of pharmacy. She's also a mom of three. But more importantly, she is such an amazing inventor. And this item that she created has revolutionized the way that people deal with sticky mucus. So I assure you, you are in the best of hands. So to learn more, visit oogiebear.com. That's oogiebear.com. Rawr. Go clean out those tiny noses. Hey guys, it's me. Before we begin this podcast, I just want to say that this is like going to be like a legit trigger warning. So if you are currently expecting and you are like, I can't have any negativity around me, I only need positivity, then probably don't listen to this. Or skip forward 35 minutes and then listen to what we have to say. I actually timed this whole podcast while Kim and I were talking. So if you're somebody who's extra sensitive, probably skip this. But if you're somebody that is in the weeds or wants to prepare in every single way other than just packing a hospital bag, skip to 35 minutes if you need to and hear where the good stuff starts and how Kim got the help that she needed and everything else. So I wish you the best. Now go listen to this podcast or just go to another episode. There's a million fun episodes that you could listen to. You don't have to have Sirius today. Go find something on travel. Go have fun.
Well, hello, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good day to you, sir. I don't know what it is when you're listening to this, but it's me, guys. And I have a new friend named Miss Kimberly Friedberg, and I want you to meet her. She has an interesting story to tell, and it's a fun evolution of I don't really like kids to what's that? I have twins. So she is a mama of four-month-old boy-boy twins. It was an interesting road that led to, you know, not the world's best delivery and a lot of unexpected situations. And so we're going to talk about the healing process of if you should experience birth trauma. Now, a lot of times people don't. So clearly, if you're listening to this, don't expect that you're going to have birth trauma. Not everybody has the same experience. And just like all of our twins are different, everybody's experience is different. I am going to tell you that I do find that twin parents experience more birth trauma than the typical average bear. One, because we often deliver early because of, you know, that whole thing that your uterus was made from one, you know, that little thing. And then also a lot of us have gone through IVF. And if you've gone through IVF, you had time to plan about what should be and how things should be. And then when you have the experience that maybe you didn't expect and certainly wasn't how you thought it should be, sometimes it comes with some disappointment. Sometimes it comes with a lot more disappointment. Sometimes it could bring you into a depression. There's a lot that goes into it. We are very complicated creatures, us twin parents. And we have Miss Kimberly, who, Kimberly, can I call you Kim? Is that like a thing?
Or do you can. I usually go by Kimberly, but you can call me Kim.
then I'm just going to call you Burley.
Because no, definitely. You can call Kim first. Odd. Kim is better than Burley. I already have body issues.
I didn't think about that. Well, Miss Kimberly, I'm very happy that you're here today.
Thanks
and
for having me.
I've been talking to Kimberly guys like for, I don't know, 4 minutes before we started taping. And I realized that we need to cover this more at Twiniversity. And so I'm going to make you my pledge that we will do a better job talking about the emotional side of having twins. You know, we really focus a lot on the logistics of it because we're like, okay, that can be in your control. The emotional side isn't necessarily always in people's control. So, Kimberly, here we are. You're 4 months in to the Mr. Toad's wild ride of parenting twins.
Yep.
And you've had a few bumps. Let's talk a little bit about how these little puppies got here in the first place.
Okay.
So, you know, when were they born? When did you think, did you ever think you'd have kids? Did you ever certainly ever think you'd have twins? What's the behind the music story?
All right. You know, I had concentrated on my career for most of my, you know, my 20s and early 30s. And I just assumed I would have kids at some point, but I just kind of kept saying, oh, well, maybe like pushing the mark down the line. And I remember I had a boyfriend when I was about 32. And after about 8 months, once I was like in love with him, he changed his mind and said he didn't want to have kids. And I said, but you said you did. And he said, yeah, I thought once you were in love with me, I'd be enough. And I realized at the moment, no, you're definitely not enough. And so that ended. And then, you know, fast forward a year or two and I met my husband. And I remember thinking to myself, if for some reason we couldn't have kids, this man's enough. Like he fills my cup. And so then, okay. So we decided to start trying when I was 38, so 2019, and we got pregnant pretty easily, which I was like, wow, that's impressive. But then we miscarried on Christmas, and I had a DNC the day after New Year's, that was really heartbreaking. Yeah. I didn't realize how heartbreaking that would be. So that was about 10 weeks. And then, we waited a cycle and got pregnant on the first try again. COVID hit. I got laid off and then a week later I miscarried again. So something in me at that point kind of snapped and I was like, I can't just keep getting pregnant, getting my hopes up and miscarrying because apparently there's something wrong. We did DNCs on both of them and it turns out there were all chromosome issues just because I was, you know, I'm older.
Okay.
At that point I was, 38. And so then we decided to go into IVF, during COVID, which was also interesting. So that started this long road of pretty much total isolation, because the clinic was like, if you get COVID, we are shutting you down and taking all your money that you already gave us. So that was very interesting. So we did one round and we got one embryo and, it did not pass testing.
Okay.
Had chromosome issues. So that felt like another miscarriage. And I don't think I was like, I'm sick of ugly crying in the shower.
Just
like this guttural cry. And then I was like, we're doing another round. So we did a second round and did all the crazy things, like cut out all scents. Like, I mean, I smelled, I didn't wear deodorant. I went totally natural and all these things that the doctor was like, maybe could help.
Yeah. Why not?
So we actually ended up getting 3 embryos and 2 tested great.
Okay.
And there are 2 boys. And so then our doctor was like, you know, we don't advise putting in 2, but you are a candidate for it because you're, you know, you've shown that you can carry children. It's just, and your body held on to the miscarriages longer. We needed to take them out with a DNC. Okay. So it's not your uterus problem. It's a chromosome issue. So now that we have two that are good with their chromosomes, it, in theory, you would be an okay candidate for it. So, but you know, they made us sign all these papers and have it notarized, saying that we knew that there was a higher risk of things like preeclampsia, cerebral palsy, all these things. And it's funny because I remember thinking, oh, I've always had really low blood pressure. So I can't imagine that I would have preeclampsia because I'm assuming women with high blood pressure get preeclampsia. I had more concerns about like cerebral palsy or, you know, something of that nature with the babies. I didn't really think much about my own body. So anyway, so we rolled the dice and we transferred both of our embryos.
Okay.
So I really didn't feel like I had a fourth pregnancy in me. And they stuck. And that was one of the best feelings. And also one of the most terrifying because we knew that they were both in there. It was like our one shot, essentially. And then, so I guess I started feeling pretty sick around week 6.5. So early.
Okay.
And my morning sickness was horrible. It was all day. And it was super strange because I started having a really bad smell aversion to my husband.
Ooh.
Like I couldn't be in the same room as him.
Wow.
I would plug my nose and he would bring me food or a drink and walk out of the room.
That's
and then I would start breathing. Yeah, it was horrible. And I felt so bad because he's so sweet and you don't want to like be disgusted by your husband.
Yeah.
And the doctor was like, you know, it happens. It's rare, but it happens. You know, you have so many hormones because you have twins and you did IVF twice. And so you're just your body's crazy right now. So anyway, so I guess around week 20, that's when I started feeling well and started eating and like the fun began, I guess. And I had a bump and I was starting to enjoy it. What I, you know, experiencing that pregnancy that I had always envisioned, you know, like I thought I would be fit. I thought I would keep up doing all my things. No, I mean, at week 11, I couldn't walk more than a mile.
If you're nauseous all the time, then you're also dehydrated.
Yeah.
There's so much that goes with that.
And everything just started falling apart. So, but at week 20, I was like, hamburgers are the best thing in the world. And I was just so happy. And then it became summer and I could go swimming, which was taking weight off. You know, it was nice. And then I think 2 weeks later, like week 22, they diagnosed me with gestational hypertension. And I was like, what? That's ridiculous. Cause I mean, my normal blood pressure is usually somewhere around like 103 over 65. And all of a sudden it was creeping up. And I was like, I thought that it's just not what I thought would ever happen. And then they explained to me that it has all to do with the placenta, I think, and nothing actually with what your body normally does. So that was kind of frustrating. And then at week 28, I went to the doctor and they mentioned, they were like, your blood pressure's high, but we don't think you needed to go to the hospital today. And I was just like, all of a sudden, I was like, wait a minute, that was an option to go to the hospital at 28 weeks? Like, this is insane. She's like, yeah, I mean, definitely that would.
Yeah,
it was a big option.
They have to watch you. Yeah, of course. And it's not even the babies. It's you. You know, with preeclampsia or signs of preeclampsia, the babies are blissfully unaware, as they say. And so they do. They have to keep an eye on you.
Yeah. So, you know, I had been taking my blood pressure every day and that's, you know, how I got yanked in there on the 28th week. But then week 29 in 2 days was my baby shower. And I almost fainted twice. And like everyone just to come to me, it was very awkward. It was strange. And a couple of my friends are doctors and they mentioned to my mom, they're like, she doesn't have long. Like this is, things are going south.
Yeah.
And then at week 30, exactly on that dot, I was called into the hospital because my blood work came back with protein in my urine. So they diagnosed me with a preeclampsia at that point. But they just watched me and they sent me home, which I thought was strange. And then 2 days later, I was having my little birthday lunch at my parents' house. I call it Seafood Fest, where my mom, she makes like all the clams, all the mussels, lobster, crab. I mean, it was insane. Like I was filled to the brim, as much as you can be when you have twins. And then afterward, we were playing this little game with my family. And the kids were, you know, loud as kids are with the board games and stuff. And it was fun. But all of a sudden, like my heart started racing and my vision started doing weird things. And it was like all the commotion became very muffled. Ugh. And I remember looking around being like, why is nobody noticing? Like there's something going on in my body. Yeah. And like, I couldn't really move. And my husband's like, you need to lay down, put your feet up. He kept saying, he's like, why aren't you moving? And I said, I can't physically move. And like, I mean, big crocodile tears were coming down my face because I was like, why can't I move? I'm coherent. Mm-hmm. I can talk, but I can't physically move. So he got my mom to rush over and they kind of just tipped me over on the couch. And after about a minute or two, things subsided. And then we called the doctor and they said, you need to go to the hospital. Because we took my blood pressure and it was something like 160 over 105. And I was like, oh, okay, well, it's been there before. And they just sent me home. I said, but let's get our bag, you know. Mm-hmm. And I remember driving to the hospital and saying, John, I think, like, am I overreacting? Because I feel like this whole pregnancy has just been this kind of Debbie Downer. Like, I've been, I had a subchorionic hemorrhage at week 11. So I had a 2-week bed rest for that. And then, you know, just kind of the sickness and everything. It just kind of was like a bit of a downtrodden experience, even though we are super excited. And he was like, no, we're going. That's the end of that. I'm not taking any sort of shenanigans from you. So we got to the hospital and they take my blood pressure and then they start immediately putting an IV in and they started putting medicine in. And I was just too busy chit-chatting, I guess. And I didn't really think much of it. But all of a sudden I realized, wait, they didn't do this on Friday when I was here. And then they took my blood pressure again and they're like, okay, that's better. And I was like, well, what is it? And they said it's like 159 over 110 or something. And I was like, well, what was it? They're like, oh, it was 189 over 115. And I was like, oh my God. And I think at that point I realized, okay, no, I really wasn't making a bigger deal out of this than it should. And so at that point, I was like, okay, well, what do we do now? And they're saying, well, you know, we were giving you these medicines to try to bring it down and control it. And I said, well, will I go home tonight? And they say, oh, no, you're not leaving until you have these babies. And I said, well, am I having these babies tonight or what am I having? And they said, well, the goal is to get you to 34 weeks, but we won't let you go past that. Mm-hmm. And so they put me into labor and delivery for 24 hours, immediately put me on a magnesium drip, which let me tell you, really, really sucks. they started it without me knowing. And all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, is anyone else really hot? Like locked in the car on a hot day with all the windows up, kind of hot. And they're like, oh, that's the magnesium. And so they started packing me full of ice packs and stuff like that. And they put a catheter in without any sort of pain relief. And I don't know what's wrong with me, but that was one of the most painful things ever. I didn't sleep at all that entire night. I slept 1 hour. And, you know, I had told my husband to go home around 10 because I was like, well, you know, it's probably fine. You know, I just kept saying, everything's probably fine. I'm tough. I can handle this. And all throughout the night, you know, I mean, every 10 minutes, my blood pressure cuff would go off. They were constantly taking blood. They would come in and do full rounds every 2 hours. And then in between that, they're coming in and, you know, having me sign paperwork, like what happens if we need to do an emergency C-section? What happens if I start to bleed out? What happens if they need to take my uterus? What happens if I die? All these things that made things very real and also quite scary.
It does, because you could easily convince yourself, we have a wonderful ability. I don't know if it's women. I don't know if it's like a Mother Nature thing, but you have such an easy way to convince yourself of things, you know, honestly. And for those of you that are out there, like there is something that we like preach a lot at Twiniversity, that like even in Kimberly's case, it's better to overreact 100% of the time than to underreact once.
Yeah.
Because like in a situation like yours, Kimberly, like seriously, like, I don't know what would have happened by morning, you know, like if you weren't monitored and had that magnesium and that's some serious business. So when you were on, you're in inpatient hospital bed rest. You're in there. You have your room
for 24 hours.
And that first time that they give you kind of that conversation of like the what ifs.
Yeah.
Right. Like here, that's. It does. It's like a frying pan to the back of your head moment that you can't believe that this is happening. Were you alone when you had that conversation with the doctors?
Yeah. And I was also alone when the NICU people came in to talk to me about everything. When I was on the magnesium and my brain was, I don't know if you've ever been on it, but it's like your brain is scrambled.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, just like trying to focus my eyes on what... on this guy who's telling me what's going on and just kind of realizing I should not have sent my husband home. Mm-hmm. This is pretty big. And it was really stupid of me to think that I was strong enough or that it would equate to being strong enough to do it alone. So that was really, the magnesium really throws you for a loop.
Yeah.
But then after 24 hours, you know, they stopped it and they took my catheter out, which was a huge relief. It's funny. I remember when I got out of bed, it felt like I had like no cartilage or tendons or anything holding my skeleton together. It just sort of felt like bug bones just in sockets. It was so strange. But then they moved me over to the antepartum unit where I stayed for the rest of the time for about 3.5 weeks. So it was interesting because, you know, right when every day I would be like, well, maybe I can go home. Maybe I should just be able to go home. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't seem like I'm not bad. And then something bad would happen. Like I would have a blood pressure spike or I'd be in the shower and I would see stars or, you know, I was watching it was during the Olympics this summer. So I would be watching TV and everything would just be like wavy lines. And I stopped being able to knit at one point because my vision was just going haywire. It was interesting because it's during COVID. I thought only my husband would be able to come, but then my mom was able to come, but it could only be one extra support person. Okay. They couldn't like tag in, tag out and swap out. So every day she was amazing and she came and brought me lunch. My husband's new office was right by the hospital. So every morning he'd bring me a green smoothie and sit with me. And then every night as he left work, he'd come by and sit with me again and watch the babies on the monitors and stuff. Wow. It was amazing having those two support. One thing that sucked is that I had my 40th birthday in the hospital. so that was a bummer, but at least I didn't have the babies on my birthday.
Yeah.
Cause that would have been too early. You know, it was a very strange thing. Once I was in antepartum, like I remember, first of all, that first 24 hours in labor and delivery, feeling like everything was really dark and really scary, like just darkness. And then the antepartum room, it just felt brighter. It felt like there was a little bit more hope. I wasn't in constant pain yet. and then, so what led to my delivery was I had 3 days straight of headaches that couldn't be cured with Tylenol. My vision started going really bad. And I also had a lot of blood pressure spikes where, I wouldn't be doing anything. I'd be in the bed and it would just shoot up.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd also really have a hard time in the shower. I'd see a lot of stars and almost pass out. And so at that point, they were like, you know, it's time. Yeah. You've only almost made it to 33 weeks. I like to say I've made it to 33 weeks, even though it was 32 in 6 days. I had 6 hours until 33. So I say,
okay, we'll give it 33. We'll count it. We'll count it. So on the delivery day, did they say like that, that's it? And was your husband there? Was your mom able to be there? Like how much notice did they give you that we're calling it?
So one thing I didn't realize is that just because you have an OBGYN that you love does not mean that they will deliver you.
Yep.
And so I remember the day before I actually did deliver, they were like, your doctor is on call tomorrow night at 5 p.m. we can do it then. They're like, of course, you might go earlier and we can't control that.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, yeah, like set that up. But like, as soon as she walks in the door, that she will do my C-section, because there was no way they were going to let me labor since I would just spike just sitting there.
Yeah.
And so we knew that day that that was going to happen. But my goal was just to make it to 5. Like, I just didn't want to go before that. My mom came and she hung out with me until my husband came at 3 p.m.
Okay.
He worked. He's a lawyer. So, yeah, he was working that day. And so I remember my husband came and, you know, they started putting me in my gown and into the wheelchair. And it's interesting because there's a corridor, you know, that only the hospital staff wheels you down. And then there's another corridor that's parallel that, you know, visitors can go down. So I was walking down the same time as my mom was leaving. And every time the doors would open that, you know, go perpendicular, I would see her. And I just remember, like, I wish you were coming with me. It's funny how you want your mom.
Yeah.
In such an adult moment. But then, they were prepping me for the OR. And again, they started, you know, giving me the risks and talking about me dying. And, you know, they were trying to find another place to put an extra IV in because they said, you know, you're at really high risk to bleed out. We need to put an extra IV in. And, you know, I had phlebotomists had been coming in to my room for 3 weeks all throughout the night, constantly poking me. So I mean, even on my feet, they were just trying to find any veins. And I have good blood veins, but for donating, but it just got to the point where there was like nothing left. And so they were just really desperately trying to find somewhere to stick me. And finally they got one. But it was very strange. I remember telling my husband, don't let them let me die. And I remember thinking it was a very strange thing for me to say, but in that moment, it was the first time I had ever felt like I need to be alive because I have these two babies to take care of. Whereas before, it's like, obviously I valued my life, but it was sort of like, okay, if you die, you know, I've had a good run. but now I was like, you cannot let me die at all. Cause we're here and these babies are everything. So then, you know, they wheeled me into the operating room and my doctor was there and it was really comforting having, you know, somebody who'd seen me throughout all of it, you know, miscarriages, everything. And honestly, the C-section was the easiest part of the entire thing. Since we started trying to get pregnant, the C-section was
It's funny, and you're not the first person to say that, but I think that as women, we build up this birth moment as going to be like one of the most traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
And you worry about it so long and you plan for it. And there's, you know, birth preferences and birth plans and you have these plans and then you're like, okay,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I don't think that, you know, you really realize like how much you went through to get into that OR. So, you know, we just assume like, oh, this is just par for the course. We're just going about our business. But, you know, that's heavy.
Yeah.
I have to say, I feel you on a lot of that, especially the thing with your mom. I mean, it's tough. And, you know, during COVID, we were very mindful of that exact emotion
when
it came to what we were doing at Twin University and how we were, you know, what we were saying in classes and what we were doing, because I know I feel you on that. So on a positive side, I love that it was an uneventful delivery and it was a typical C-section. So how long were you in there before baby A was screaming?
So I was in there and they gave me the spinal block, laid me down, strapped my arms in, and then they started cutting.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I felt like I could breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, baby A is here. And I was like, just please cry, please cry. And all of a sudden I heard him cry and I just started crying and it was the best feeling ever. And then 2 minutes later, baby bee arrived after like some crazy tugging. So this is, I didn't realize this part. It's like he's like all up in my ribs or something. So I mean, my whole body is just like shifting on the table. Just like my husband couldn't believe it. He said, your body is like being manhandled. And you can't feel it, of course, but it's a very interesting sensation. So then he came out and started crying. And I really could breathe at that point. I was like, oh my God, I haven't been able to breathe in so long. This is amazing. So that was amazing. It was just so great. And then they brought him around to see me for maybe like 45 seconds. It was not very long. We took a picture and then they were taken away to the NICU. And I told my husband to go with them. I didn't want the babies to be alone. And then spent about 30 minutes to 40 minutes stitching me back up.
Beautiful.
So it's very quick, waiting for them to come. Or for them to get them out.
Yeah.
Rather.
It's usually pretty quick, but it is amazing. The tugging is fun and the breathing is like not surprising. Like if baby like super comfortable in there and you didn't realize how much lung capacity you lost because of these babies.
It's
so now
so true.
They go into the NICU, you're in the NICU for a month. You spend a good amount of time.
But I didn't see them for 24 hours.
Because you then had to go and they had all your medications. They had to level you out.
They
did you have postpartum
again.
Hemorrhaging post-delivery? Good.
Everything in my uterus is great.
Excellent.
But they put me on the magnesium to prevent seizures and strokes again. And at least this time I could eat. I thought it was horrible the first time that they let me eat, pregnant woman. That was incredibly painful not being able to hold my babies or see them for 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny telling people later that happened because they're like, oh my God, I would have ripped everything off and gone to get my babies. And I'm like, do you really think I didn't want to do that? I mean, you're actually kind of paralyzed because of the magnesium and
everything and your epidural
that's in you.
Too.
And
you can't
epidural,
like
I feel anything.
Yeah, that's not an option. So.
Yeah.
No, it's not at all. And it's one of the first moments that you realize that as a mom, it's your oxygen mask on first situation.
Yeah, you know,
and the nurses were, I imagine your nurses were so, they're so used to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're so used to moms wanting to fight to get to their babies. But it's, you know, you got to make sure that you're stable before you have that experience. So I want to jump to kind of now where we are here. So the NICU is ebbs and flows, just like, you know, so many other things. And
but they are pure angels who work there.
Oh my gosh.
Amazing.
Like
people.
Seriously, I don't even know how people choose that profession. I think it's so unbelievably incredible. And not just obviously the doctors, but really the nurses, because the nurses are the ones that are physically holding
your
hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're great. So I always try to remind people, like, you know, if you do, you know, nobody wants a NICU experience, but know that you're in like the most skilled hands in that hospital. Like that's them. You know, doctors, they deliver babies and then they throw them off for the 3 points to the side. But those nurses are really hands-on versus like a postpartum floor where they're not handling your babies. They're, you know, bringing you things and checking your blood pressure. But the NICU, the NICU staff is incredible. So with the IVF and then the difficulties during pregnancy and then the, you know, the hospital situation, was there any mental health support that was given to you as a standard of care?
I'd say no. I think that the NICU nurses, they were very aware, you know, they know, they see it every day.
Okay.
And so I think they were constantly trying to get me to not feel guilty leaving at night. You know, I'd cry every night when I would leave. They were constantly trying to get me to take care of myself so I could heal and be better for the boys and reassure me that they were there and the best help, like you said. But in terms of like dealing with the IVF and all the infertility stuff, no, there was nothing.
Yeah.
I probably should have talked to somebody.
See, but the thing is I know you're saying that you should have talked to somebody, but this is like one of my frustrations. And what I'm trying to hope is that people are putting that as a standard of care, right? Mm-hmm. Because a standard of care was them monitoring your babies. The standard of care is them monitoring your blood pressure. Yet you're going through the most traumatic portions of your life, through the miscarriages and mm-hmm. the IVF, which hormonally is such an mf-er of just a roller coaster. It's insane. Yeah.
That's
even
the hardest
forget
thing I think
about
I've ever done.
Yeah,
that was
like
harder
pre baggage, post baggage. It's just wild. And then you have this hospital bed rest day, and then you know you have your delivery. Knock on wood, wonderfully uneventful. Then you have a NICU stay, and yet somehow we literally just don't get any support for our emotional needs. You know, they're so quick to give us the magnesium and so quick to, you know, grab an ice pack. And it's very frustrating to me. And I apologize for those of you that are listening, like, what's the point of Nat ranting? But if I rant about it, then you could make it your standard of care.
Yeah.
Because if you're listening to this, even though your doctor's not like, here's the support that you need, could you just freaking trust me and get a therapist, mm-hmm. virtually or not, the minute that they hear a second heartbeat?
Yeah.
I think it would be so great. So now, when did you realize that you were carrying a lot of this emotion with you? And when did you say, like, this was definitely something?
Yeah. A month after the boys got home. So, you know, seemingly everyone's great. We made it through. Hurrah, you know?
Yeah.
And a month after they were home, they came to do the oxygen test. So a lot of times babies in Colorado come home on oxygen, but especially preemies,
mm-hmm.
Just because of our altitude. And so they came and they dropped off this little machine that has, alarms and a lot of bells and whistles, and it attaches to their foot, the pulse ox. And one of my son's machines was very trigger happy, and it was going off, no joke, every 2 minutes for 12 hours, and it's loud, and we could not adjust the volume. The volume was broken.
Yes, it's deafening.
And I started having heart palpitations. I started freaking out every time the alarm went off.
Yeah.
And my husband's like, what is wrong with you? Why? It's fine. Like, he's fine. Look at him. He's breathing. It's okay. And I would just, it was literally like I was jumping out of my skin, mm-hmm. I guess figuratively, but it felt like I was doing that. And I was like, something is wrong. I need to call my doctor because I don't think I should be feeling this way. And it brought back all these emotions of like crazy darkness from that first night, that mm-hmm. first 24 hours on the magnesium. And I started having nightmares about that first night and just the darkness and alarms going off and panic. And so the doctor was like, okay, you have PTSD, you need to start mm-hmm. talking to somebody, but we're really happy you acknowledged it when it started instead of waiting, because dealing with it right out of the, off the bat is really critical mm-hmm. in terms of kind of slowing the snowball effect, essentially, mm-hmm. you know, the longer you don't deal with it, the bigger it gets mm-hmm. and the more out of control it gets.
Correct.
So I've been seeing a therapist, and it's interesting because she deals with a lot of military vets for PTSD, but she also does birth PTSD. And I was just like, you know, I feel kind of silly talking to somebody who speaks with veterans. I mean, they see some majorly hard things. And she explained to me, you know, trauma is trauma, whether it's a little T or a big T, it's how your body processes these things that happen to you. And, you know, you weren't in combat, but I mean, you went through some really intense, hard things, life-threatening things. And so the best way to deal with it is you have to talk about it until you can't talk about it anymore, or until you don't need to talk about it anymore. That's how you deal with it. So every week I talk about my story. And it's interesting how each week it's easier to talk about. I don't have nightmares anymore. I also don't feel bad talking about it because it's not like I don't know about you, but sometimes when I talk to people who are in my life about these things, it feels like I'm burdening them, or, you know, they have a bias in terms of how they know me and stuff like that. So it's really been nice talking to a therapist who is completely not involved in my life and can really take a big stance on it in terms of looking at it from far away.
Yes.
So that is definitely helpful. I mean, so I realized that, so I'm terrified of the dark now, which is interesting. Nights are hard for me now, which I never liked the dark particularly, but now especially. So, you know, like the night feedings were really hard. And like when they would cry, it would kind of start that panic again, which is funny because during the day I'd be fine with both of them.
Well, there's the safety in the light, and you know that there's other people around to rescue you. And night is definitely significantly more isolating because you can't see who's out there.
Yeah.
So you assume it's no one.
And I realized that I was carrying a lot of trauma from sending my husband home that night,
mm-hmm.
and resentment and feeling abandoned. And, you know, it was funny, the night after my birth, my husband finally stayed in the hospital with me for 2 nights. And I remember him telling me he was tired. And inside of me, I was just like, how can you tell me you're tired? After everything I just went through, I haven't slept. You know, I was pretty much on bed rest for 7 weeks. I haven't slept in the hospital for 3.5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
These alarms have been going off. I just went through a major surgery. I understand you're tired, but please don't tell me you're tired. And then, you know, I had this crazy referred back pain or gas pain from the surgery, you know, like when they open up your body and then they trap air in there. And it was so painful. I mean, they were giving me all sorts of drugs and I couldn't feel my C-section, but they could not get rid of the gas pain. So you just had to walk it off. So all night I was walking it off because I didn't want to interrupt my husband's sleep because he was in the hospital room.
Mm-hmm.
And so a nurse walked the halls with me. And I don't want to make it sound like my husband's insensitive. He's wonderful. But for some reason, I had it in my mind that I had to make sure that he could sleep. And like, I didn't want to burden him. And now I'm talking to my therapist and realizing after all this time how I just felt completely just like abandoned in the night, in the darkness, dealing with pain and dealing with really scary stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's gotten to the point where I'm like, I'm sorry you have to go to work, but I need you to help me with the boys if both of them start crying in the middle of the night. I need you to sleep in the same bed. You could wear earplugs, but like, and you could just sleep through if I can handle both of it by myself. But I need to know that you're near me and not in another bedroom. And so he's been doing that. Well, luckily or not, I ended up getting mother's thumb. Like I sprained my wrist because
he's
holding the babies too much, which I thought was crazy. So I actually needed his help in the night. And that's when I started realizing all those feelings about him and abandonment. So that's when it allowed me to open up and have that conversation with him. And so now he's actually staying in the bed with me, even though my wrist is better and I can handle it all.
Yeah.
So I guess that's sort of the silver lining.
You know, the interesting piece is that he never asked you to let him sleep, but yet.
Yeah.
Somehow
he just said he was tired, and I read that.
Yeah, and it isn't that unbelievable, and that is also, it's very typical. And when I meet people who don't feel like that, I say, I want whatever you have.
Yeah, I wish
whatever
I,
that
I wish
is that,
that
makes
yeah.
you advocate for yourself.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know what our problem is that we do this, but. It is. There's this weird thing like I have to, you know, like I'm going through this. There's no reason for everybody else to go through this with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nope. So if
everyone
I'm sinking,
shouldn't be miserable.
Yeah. If I'm sinking, I'll just sink.
Yeah.
But like, you know that, or you think that he couldn't help you. Because mm-hmm. what is he going to do for you? What is he just going to walk next to you? He might as well get some rest.
Yeah, and I also kind of just didn't want to hear him say he was tired. Like, I didn't want to hear a sigh. I didn't want to deal with having that on top of my own struggles. Like, I just, it was almost better for me to not have to see how tired he was or hear how tired he was, just because I was using everything I had to get through.
Yeah. And it's not only like that parents experience, but it's another reason why parents of twins isolate themselves from their singleton friends.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to hear about your one baby. It's not.
Oh, like, and let me tell you,
I don't care anymore. I used to care. You used to be my best friend. Mm-hmm. But right now I can't listen to you and your situation when I'm here in, you know, a foxhole being fired at from above. This is not something that we could discuss.
Yeah, I have a friend, and I remember becoming super angry. Like, I'm still just frustrated with her because, you know, she had a baby 4 years ago and still would lament about how she didn't have the birth she wanted. She didn't have an unmedicated vaginal birth. I'm like, but you had a vaginal birth and you had a really healthy baby. And like, that's awesome. And then I'm like, I think I got really upset because I was just like, you don't even know how bad it can get.
Yeah.
Like, you were so damn lucky. And then, so she just had a baby, I guess, a month before I had the twins. And he ended up going to Children's Hospital for just like 3 days in the NICU because I guess he was sent home too early, couldn't regulate his temperature. But I texted her every day that he was there. Well, she knew that I was in the hospital for a long time. And I heard from her once. Mm. And then I had the babies. And a week later, she finally texted, and I was like, I had the babies a week ago. Great. They're in the NICU. Okay. Still didn't hear from her again. And it was just like, are you kidding me? You're like, you know,
I'm going to come to her defense for a second because now through my significant therapy situation, you know, she may not have been able to talk to you because it triggered her response to her NICU. So speaking to you could have brought the equivalent would be you in the evening at nighttime.
Right.
So
right.
It's interesting. It's really unbelievable. But the thing that I say to myself all the time now, and it's become like my little mental mantra, is everybody's worst is their worst.
Yes. That's what my therapist said. She said, it might seem like a very small thing to you, her horrible time with her birth, feeling like she was gypped, but that was maybe a little T of a trauma for her versus like your big T of a trauma. So it's still trauma. It's still something that she has to process and all these things. And I think it was also, I was just really frustrated with myself for having these really intense feelings of disgust almost towards her reaction and her treatment of me as a friend. Whereas, you know, we're all going through crap. It's not easy.
I know this is going to sound like very weird. Did you read my book?
I did.
You did.
Yeah. Okay.
Then maybe you might remember
when I was all nauseated in bed.
That was not the good time. That's a bad memory. Please read it again now in the daytime. That's it. Read some things now. But there is somebody who came to the hospital to see the babies when I delivered, but didn't come to see me. And I will tell you that there's not enough therapy in the world that could let you let go of some things.
Yeah.
And so really in like, Kimberly, go to the point right now where you can say, listen, you just had your twins. It may not have been your experience. Could you please do this for me? What would you tell the mother that is in her pregnancy right now, maybe listening to this in a freaking hospital bed, in the same situation that parents have, you know, what would you tell that mom?
I would say, if things go awry and not the way you planned, do not beat yourself up for feeling like you failed. your body is doing miraculous things. And sometimes these things just happen. It's really hard to carry twins. I would say, you know, don't feel like you are overreacting. Advocate for yourself. If something is feeling weird, mention it, because it could, I mean, if anything, I mean, mentally, emotionally, physically, if anything is feeling weird or feeling off, mm-hmm. there's something about a mother's instinct, but tell somebody, because it really could save your life. Whether it's saving you from a seizure like mine, mentioning certain things, or if it's saving you from postpartum depression, and hurting yourself or your baby. I think the biggest thing I learned is that, advocating for myself and telling people when I did need help, mm-hmm. which is not natural for me. That was kind of the strongest thing I could do when I felt so weak and felt like I failed. I felt like my body was failing me, but it didn't. It did amazing things. It created two very healthy boys who are happy and, you know, growing like crazy now. And it didn't last as long as I wanted, and it didn't end the way I wanted it to. But ultimately it did, because you're here. And I think it's just very helpful that I mentioned when I was struggling.
Yes.
And I got help. Because things are getting easier every day in terms of that. Like, I don't have nightmares anymore.
Good. Thank God.
I feel comfortable talking about my story. That's why I wanted to do this, is I just felt like if anyone could hear this and feel like they're not alone, or feel like, okay, maybe I should ask my doctor about this thing that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And if that helps them, then it was all worth it.
It will. It will. And so I'm going to sum this up for us, right? Because I am future Kimberly. So I, you know, had, she could have wrote the script right now on my situation, between the guilt, the not wanting to bother people, the underreaction, I could literally make a laundry list of very typical things that parents of twins do. And if you're going to listen to us, and there's something that I really want you to remember, she's telling the story herself. She's not hurt. She doesn't have, you know, she didn't lose her vision or her hearing.
Yep.
She didn't, you know, she had babies in the NICU, which is very typical for somebody, whether you were born at 28 weeks, like other podcasts mm-hmm. that we've had guests of, or you were born at 38 weeks. It doesn't matter. This is part of the story. And there is a saying that's actually on a post-it that is on my computer right now. And it's something that I have to say all the time, is you have to talk to cope.
Yeah.
And if you just talk as you think that it's a waste of air, and so you'll be like, I can't tell my story again. I can't do it. Like, who wants to listen to it? Who cares? Who cares about my birth story? You know, your best friend, they had their own problems. And then if you bring up your problems, they're going to bring up their problems, which is why it's important that you do speak to a mental health professional. I'm not saying don't talk to your best friend. But what your best friend is going to do is your best friend is going to respond. And often the way that untrained people respond is with their own story and being relatable and saying, here's how I relate to you. But when you are talking to heal, you don't want a freaking relatable story. You just want to be heard, and like legitimately heard, which is why you should pay someone to listen to you. Because husbands are great. Besties are great. You know, if you are a dad that's listening to this, wives are great. Or your husband is great. Who am I? Your wife is. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who you have. But I do know that when you are talking to people that care about you, and you're telling a story, and you're talking to your mom, their reaction is going to, I have to help her right now. How am I going to help her? Let me do this for her. Let me make her laugh. Let me make her a shrimp fest You know, like what is the love language that you convey to somebody? But when you speak to somebody professionally, they are going to listen with an educated ear. And I don't have it, by the way. I just want all of you out there in the world to know that I am not like you could talk to me and you could call me, but I am going to try to make you a shrimp fest. I am going to try to make you laugh because I am not skilled to be able to do that. And I know that a lot of Twiniversity people do, but I'm a good first line of defense. So like if you don't have somebody, you literally just email us at community@twiniversity.com. We have a membership group that meets the first Monday of every month that's run by a social worker. So we have the resources for you guys out there. It's your choice of whether you accept them from us. And with the membership, I will tell you, hell yeah, there's a charge for that because I'm paying people to do that for you guys. But if you can't do it and you have to choose between diapers or a Twiniversity freaking membership, dude, just email me and say, I can't afford it. And I'm going to say, dunzo, you're good. I got you. Like, this is what we could do for you. It's few and far between that people actually take us up on our offer. But when you listen to Kimberly and you're like, oh, shit, what the hell's going to happen to me? And now I have to put an E on this episode because of that. So now this is just turned into explicit. I got to write that down so I remember to say that. But when you're listening to this, your takeaway shouldn't be, I'm going to have an experience like Kimberly's, or my experience is I'm going to have an experience like Nat's if you really do know my story, which I don't recommend you listen to. But just know that you cannot do this on your own. If your leg was broken, you would not try to set that shit in the house. You would not be like, oh, let me fix this. Let me buddy tape my legs together and just go about my business. But when you have a mental health issue, it's a ghost that's just lurking around your house, be it in the dark, God forbid, like Kimberly, be it, you know, your friend who gets triggered by a NICU experience, be it by a scent that is a cleaning solution that they used in the hospital. Or, you know, something that you ate that day and you had asparagus that morning. And now every time you see asparagus, you immediately have nausea. Everybody presents trauma in a different way. And while you're seeing it like, oh, this is a typical parenting thing. I'm supposed to be stressed. I'm supposed to feel this way. You're not. You're not supposed to feel that way. You shouldn't be triggered by things. You have to get help. And I know, like, I'm standing here on a soapbox and I'm being a little microaggressive, as my daughter would say, but you will carry it with you if you do not get help.
Yeah.
Like, trust me when I tell you, my Twiniversity is my freaking do-over. I am still dealing with this shit 17 years later. And it is not getting better. And so my therapy is I have to talk to cope and not talk to educate. Because I did not realize that I do that. I will tell people, like, here's my experience and you're going to be okay and things are going to be fine. But my end game of speaking isn't for me to feel better. It's to make you feel better. And that's what therapist, you don't talk to your therapist to help them have a better day. You talk to your therapist to be like, I don't know why I'm doing this. This is really stupid. Why am I telling you this story again? I see no point to it. But you have to do it. And then everybody, like if your therapist says to you, well, you know, or your doctor, have you processed this? WTF does that mean?
Yeah.
What does that mean? What does processing mean? What does that look like? Am I blending it up? Am I making it into a... What does that look like? And it doesn't look the same for Kimberly as it does for anybody else.
Yeah.
So you can't say, here's a cookie cutter situation. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to call a number. And know that there are international postpartum groups that will help you. And so we're going to put some resources down below and you could click on anything. You could join us for Fun Times USA. But this is not uncommon. And while you may not have preeclampsia and while you may not be on hospital bed rest and while you may have had, you know, something go wrong, just like Kimberly said about her friend, that she's like, you know, I didn't have a satisfying experience. Well, I'll roll my eyes at that. And Kim will roll her eyes at that. And we'll be like, good for you, buddy. Like, that's, you know, that's cute. Hold my beer. Like, let's talk if you want to get into it. But this isn't a game of one-upmanship.
Yeah.
Your worst is your worst.
Yeah.
So please, I beg you, please get the support that you need. And Kimberly, honestly, like, thank you for sharing that. And you know, the interesting thing is that since you shared this and it's kind of now going to live forever on the interwebs, I'm really interested to see when you could listen to this and not have kind of like a step back from it. Yeah. So
I'll let you know when that happens.
It will happen. It will happen. I do have faith that it will happen. It may not happen, you know, before their first birthday. It may not happen before their seventh birthday.
Yeah.
But you will come to terms with it at some point, and it will be a story you tell. And, you know, what's weird is that Kimberly hasn't gotten there yet, but when you have a traumatic delivery, every time your children have a birthday, there's going to be, if you do not process it, there's going to be a piece of you that says, why are we celebrating this?
Oh, interesting.
Like, this is the day that, you know, I thought I was going to meet my maker. Like, yeah. why are we lighting candles?
Yeah.
You know, and you have to figure out how to take the positives out of it. And I will tell you, it is hard. It is freaking hard to do. And there is definitely, because I haven't processed it, and because I literally didn't know that it was something that I had to do, because I am, I'll say I'm a dummy, but of course people would get mad at me for saying that, because I'm just, you know, I've kept myself a little busy with you guys for, you know, the past almost 13 years of Twiniversity. And then before Twiniversity, I ran the Manhattan Twins Club. So since the babies were 7 months old. So since my twins were 7 months, I've been on a constant soapbox of education, support, community, humor. Here's what we do. Here's what we're going to do about it. But I never stopped. I never stopped to say, maybe I should fix this. So with my kid's birthday tomorrow, there's this whole, why the hell are we celebrating this? You know, and then last year with the pandemic, and I'm like, really now, come on.
Yeah.
Do we really have to do something? But you can't do that to your kids, and you can't make them hate their birthday. And it is a celebration, because you may not have been a parent. Like, you wouldn't be a parent without them. I mean, maybe you have extra bonus kids here and there, but you know, this is the big one. So if you're going to take something away, listen to Kim's story and be like, dude, she went through it. And look, she's telling that.
Yeah.
And then if you're going to take something away from my story, do something like today. Like, when you press stop on this podcast, Google, you know, maternal therapists and perinatal, postpartum, whatever the hell you want to say, Google that type of therapy. Because this is a very skill set. It's a very specific skill set that somebody needs. And, you know, you could meditate till the cows come home. I'm going to tell you, like, I literally went and spent 2 weeks learning transcendental meditation.
Yeah, the meditation wasn't helping anymore.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you, Andy. So I don't know
I would like to say that it is pretty impressive. I think especially a nice thing that came out of COVID is that all these therapists do video chat.
Mm-hmm.
So as a twin mom, it's hard to get out and like schlep everything, you know, you do it. But if there's a time where you can just sit at home and do your therapy, you're going to take it. And it's really available now, which is, I think, really nice. A lot of platforms, in addition to the stuff that you offer, you know, there's a lot of different therapists that, you know, you can interview them on your video chat. On your computer, anything like that. And it just makes it a lot easier. So if you're sitting at home, overwhelmed with your twins who are screaming, saying, I can't get out of the house to get therapy, to do something for myself. If you could just have somebody come over for an hour, a neighbor or something, and watch your kids, and just go find a quiet room in your house or in your apartment, it'll help. And you can do it.
It will help. And please don't do the texting therapy support. That's BS. Yeah. That's garbage. Yeah. So I love it. I love the theory of it, but meet somebody person to person virtually. And also remember that even if you can't find somebody now because of virtual therapy, depending on people's licenses, they could even go across state lines. So if you're in Colorado and you Googled somebody and you found somebody in Tennessee, don't assume they can't help you.
Yeah, mine's in Indiana.
See, I'm telling you right there. It's absolutely
And insurance is taken. So that's good.
My insurance is covered. I pay $25 for a therapy session. That's my copay. And it is, I would say it's the stupidest money that I spend each week because I could think of other ways to spend it. But, you know, it's a process.
Yeah.
That word I discussed.
Well, we did.
Process. Oh, my gosh.
This is one, though.
Kimberly, thank you very, very much. I really appreciate you talking
me.
To us today. Guys,
I appreciate you listening.
it's, I don't even know if it's an honor to listen. Like now it's like drinking up all stuff for me, but it's good because it has to come out. And I appreciate that you took one of what your therapy sessions was. Wait till you get my copay. It's really good that you're doing it. And so everybody could learn something from this story, your story and this rant and everything. But even if there was like literally two people that listen to this, and I know we get thousands of downloads, but if two people actually do what we're saying that they should do, then we've really solved something big here.
And every time I tell the story, I am noticing that I'm stronger than I thought, you know, in terms of everything, you know, how we even brought these babies here. I mean, that's freaking amazing.
Yeah.
What the body can
really
do.
Is.
And I think, you know, when you're in it and you're thinking, I can't get through this, you're gonna get through it.
Yes.
And you might have, you know, some messiness to clean up later, emotionally speaking, but it's doable. And as long as you're honest with yourself and you're open with other people, you'll get there.
You will. Oh, guys. And if there is a way, like I said, that we could help you, just email us at community@twiniversity.com. You could send us a direct message on any single social platform. We're on every single one of them. We're just at Twiniversity. And even Pinterest has a messaging system. So don't say you couldn't find us. But do reach out and, you know, go through your own insurance first, your own everything first, because, you know, you could call me. And honestly, I am just going to tell you, you know, the first thing you do is go to your health insurance website, look at find providers, see who's there. Then once you have who's there, honestly, then I mean, this is literally the process. See who's there. Then you go to Psychology Today. You look them up on Psychology Today. You see what their subspecialties are.
Yeah.
And then, so you do like a pre-vetting situation. And then you make the call and say, you know, are you accepting new patients? And if you are, don't have, you know, don't do a dump right there in that first phone call. Reserve, you know, some, because you could do a big dump. And then they say, oh, I'm so sorry, Ned, we're not accepting new patients. And you're like, great, great. What did I just do? I just wasted everybody's time. So reach out to us. And I, for, you know, those two listeners that are out there, and if you're out there, just know that we feel you, and you have people like Kimberly and I that are in your corner, and we're rooting for you. And we know that you could do this, and we know it's not easy, and we know you don't want to, and we know it's inconvenient and you don't have the time. But trust me when I tell you, just please listen to us and please get you some help that you need.
Yeah.
So thanks so much for listening. And until next time, guys, I'll see you later, alligators.